Bunker Tov, Rebbe. And there's Richie. We need, he's here. We need him.
Here we go. Richie, true to his word, is here to lead us on today's daf in the Sechet Chulin, daf Kufchet, and we're right up to the Halakha Mishnah with the most brilliant introduction of our very own Sir Richard. Sounds like Richie got up to his Friday slichas last night.
No, I barely slept. I'm not in great shape, but hopefully I'll make it through the daf.
Make it through the daf? You've got to lead us on through all kinds of other things. Today's daf. Okay, we're moving on with the introduction to the Halakha Mishnah Daf Kufchet. Tipat chalav shenafela al hachaticha. So we've got some serious issues coming up over here. You remember that we discussed the halacha of chaticha naaset nevela, which we said is generally referred to as hanan, chaticha naaset nevela. And we spoke about that in the context of a little bit of chelev, where the taste of the chelev went into the meat, and we were talking about the idea that whatever absorbs the taste of something may actually turn into that din, so that there's no way afterwards that you could just think about how much chelev was absorbed in a particular piece of meat. You have to consider the entire piece of meat as being an avela. And then, of course, if you hold up Rabbi Yehuda, things get even worse, because according to him, remember min b'mino lo batel. So if the piece of meat itself became a chevtza of iser, then there's no way that it'll ever be batel again from the tam, because there's no din of tam by min b'mino. It'll be always usser. So that was the discussion we had over there in the dinim of chelev and baser. And now we're talking about chalav and basar. Now, there's a big difference when it comes to chalav and basar. The difference is clear when you think about it, and that is that the idea of basar v'chalav is that it's a new entity of iser called basar v'chalav. The basar on its own is not aser, and the chalav on its own is not aser, and even the taste of one and the other is not aser. The Torah only asert if it were cooked together. But there's no din of basar b'chalav just because something has the taste of the other in it. And that means that this new thing called basar b'chalav, even if you don't agree that chaticha na'aseit nevela on something like a tam of chelev in basar, I mean, why would the basar turn into nevela? But if you're talking about basar b'chalav, it's no longer meat, it's basar b'chalav. So you could see that in that case, the item itself is a new defined entity, and therefore it's the entity that's osur. It's not the taste of the milk that's osur, it's the basar b'chalav that's osur. So I'm giving you this introduction because I want you to understand the way that the different shitot. It's an extremely complex sugya, this concept of chaticha na'aseit nevela, and it borders on another issue that we've spoken about, which is the question of efshar l'sochato. Can you squeeze out the iser in something? That is to say, let's say that you had originally a proportion of iser teheter that would have asered. And now this piece falls into a big container, a pot full of something that's mutter, and now there's enough in it to be mevatel the tam that was in the original iser that fell into that piece. Can you squeeze it out and say that now it is basically, it is scattered, and that it is much less of a proportion than it was originally? And originally you had maybe it was 10% of what was in this piece. And now that you've put it into this big pot, it's maybe, I don't know, 0.05%. Does it then become mutter because you took the taste out and you spread it out throughout the mixture? Or does that piece itself remain osur? That's called asur l'sochato. Efshar l'sochato. The question is efshar l'sochato asur or mutar? There's many machlokasin about these dinim, and it's extremely confused. And the reason that it's confused is because there's a confusion of the sugyas. As I explained to you, if you're talking about basur b'chalav, it makes a tremendous amount of sense to say that once something got that taste of basur b'chalav, it doesn't become something other than basur b'chalav just because you squeeze it out. And there, indeed, the way that we paskin is that chaticha is nasek nevela b'basur b'chalav, and that, because of that, essentially, osur l'sochto is osur, because how could you possibly squeeze it out if there's no particular thing that's osur? It's the entire piece that's osur. So what exactly would you be squeezing out? However, now this is a big machlokas, I have to tell you, gufa between the Rashba and the Tur, but this is the way that is easiest to understand, and in my opinion, most reasonable to understand, that when it comes to other isurim, the question of chaticha na'aseh nevela and efshel l'sochto are totally different issues. When it comes to basur v'chalav, it's true that if you hold chaticha na'aseh nevela, then you cannot possibly hold efshel l'sochto. And in today's Gemara, we're going to be making the assumptions that those two things are the same. You can't have one without the other. If you could squeeze out the issur, then it obviously has not become an avela, right? But when it comes to other sugyas, the Rashba and many others like him, the Drisha and the Prisha and the other, some of the other most choshev poskim on the tour, on the Shulchan Aruch, paskin, first of all, like the Rabbeinu Ephraim. The Rabbeinu Ephraim Shita, it's kedai for you just to recall these names because they're always taken for granted that you know about them if you're dealing with this sugya. The Rabbeinu Ephraim Shita is that chaticha na'aseh nevela is only a din when it comes to basur b'chalav, for the reason that I explained to you. It's a new entity, and therefore, how could it be otherwise? So there we say chaticha na'aseh nevela, and indeed, now, this is not the Rabbeinu Ephraim, I'm adding this. And indeed, when it comes to that sugya, which is our sugya today, the chaticha na'aseh nevela implies that efshel l'sochto is osur, because obviously you can't squeeze a thing out of itself. And therefore, once it's become a new entity, how would you be able to squeeze out the isur? But when it comes to the question of chelev, let's say, where the taste of the chelev was absorbed in the basur, now, if you don't hold chaticha na'aseh nevela b'shar isurim, which is the shita of Rabbeinu Ephraim, you get to another question. Where you have a chaticha na'aseh nevela, when it is remixed, and in the remixture, the concentration of the isur is maybe 1% of what it previously was, does the change in concentration affect the original piece as well? Or do we say that the original piece has absorbed so closely the isur that you cannot fully squeeze it out and make it the equal of the concentration of parts per whatever unit we're using? You can't make it the equivalent of the rest of the pieces in the pot. So let's translate that into an actual case. Where we would have chaticha na'aseh nevela in the case of chelev, remember, we were talking about the simplest case, but which is not the standard case. The simplest case is where, for some reason, there was only one piece, a small steak that was being cooked together with a piece of usher fat. Now, there was only a little bit of meat, and that piece of meat became saturated with the isur of chelev. So if you say chaticha na'aseh nevela, then if that piece would fall into another 1,000 pieces of perfectly kosher steak, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would be usur. Why? Because since it's min b'minay labata. If you don't hold of Rabbi Yehuda, you would still need 60 times as much of other steak in order to be mavato that steak, unless, and I'm reminding you of all of these things because they're coming up today, so please don't lose patience, unless there was also a soup and spice base to that mixture, in which case, first we would look to see the enomino. The enomino would be the soup. If there's enough soup to be 60 against the one, then we would say Salek et mino kamisha eno. Ignore the min bimino, because first we want to see if we can be mevatel in eno mino rabba lavu mevatlo. Then you start from the point of view of bittel. And only if there's not enough to be mevatel the piece, then we would get to the question of min bimino lo batel according to Rabbi Yehuda, you see? So I'm stripping things down to very straight, simple laboratory cases. There's no real soup in the mixture. There's no real gravy in the mixture that would be enough to be mevatel the single piece, even though it's a bit pad. We would look, therefore, only at the basic other pieces, and that piece that absorbed all of that chelev would answer all the other pieces. But if initially you had a mixture of one piece together with all these other pieces, and it was lying in the gravy or in the soup at the same time, which means that there was a constant mixture of liquid that was going through the entire mixture, and especially, as we'll see today, if you were stirring it. Now, if it was being stirred at the moment that the iser falls in, so then, of course, the iser will be distributed equally throughout the entire mixture. And then it wouldn't make sense to discuss the particular single piece in practical terms. So therefore, where would we be discussing the issue of chaticha na'aseit nevela? Where we have a large pot that is only, let's say, one-third filled with liquid, which is very common, and you have a couple of pieces that are on top and they're not in the liquid at all. And in that case, you've got to deal with the issue of chaticha na'aseit nevela of those pieces that are on top. But this is only if, A, you're not stirring. Of course, if you're stirring, then it would be distributed throughout. And B, the pot isn't covered. Because if the pot is boiling and covered, then the boiling itself mixes everything because you've got the steam and the water that's rising throughout and constantly circulating. So if there's the circulation of the medium, then you're never going to come up with a chaticha na'aseit nevela problem unless there is so much iser that it's enough to answer the entire contents of the pot. Okay, that's very rare. So when we talk about chaticha na'aseit nevela, we have to take into consideration whether the mixture is ongoing. And the reason we have to consider if it's ongoing is because we've got a little bit of a problem. And that is, just because a human is mixing something, that doesn't mean that he's doing a particularly good job at mixing. People tend to be lazy, and they concentrate the movement of their spoon or something in one particular area. They're not absolutely clear that he's going to be doing this. In the Lashon of the Gemara, yofa, yofa. That doesn't mean he's doing it really great. So that lends another question, because covering and boiling, which is a natural process and doesn't need these humans to get involved, there we can be sure that we've got a good mixture. But having some schmo sit there watching his telephone while he's lazily moving his spoon in the other hand, that is certainly not particularly reliable for doing a good job of mixing. So that gives us another problem. Do we have to worry about the actually efficiency of the mix, which we'll see as a machlokas as well, whether we're geyser that maybe the mixing wasn't done properly. So if we're dealing, so what it's we're coming out here is like this. If we're dealing with batzer v'chalav, then the chatichat na'aseit nevela is in fact a disaster. And it equals oser in the case of efshel esochto, because, as I said, you can't squeeze something out of itself. And therefore, this circuit, which is dealing with batzer v'chalav, actually assumes that the two issues are the same. If chaticha na'aseit nevela, then efshel esochto is oser. And if efshel esochto is mutter, then that means we don't hold on chaticha na'aseit nevela, which is absolutely clear if you're talking about poser b'cholav. But that doesn't mean that efshel esochto is irrelevant in other isurim if you don't say chaticha na'aseit nevela. Why? Because efshel esochto revolves around a different issue. It is the question of whether the initial concentration that was present in the particular piece that was exposed to a very high concentration of iser was the original piece squeezable, so to speak. could you actually redistribute the Isser that's in it fully? Or do we say that Efshel Esochto is not possible on the original piece that was so thickly filled with that Isser, and that piece will always remain Usser, but that doesn't mean it's a Chatichas Nevela. If it's Usser, it's not that the whole piece is going to Usser everything else if it's Min B'minai. The piece isn't Usser. It's only the taste of the Chelev in it that's Usser. But the taste of the Chelev remains in that piece if you hold Efshel Esochto Usser. So that is the Shita of the Rashba, and it gives a very clear explanation of why it is that the two sugyas are not seen as equal. Because obviously you could hold, we don't say Chatichas Nasis Nevela Bishar Isurim, and we do nonetheless say Efshel Esochto is Usser. Very simple. Now, obviously, if you hold Chatichas Nevela is Usser, then you can't say Efshel Esochto, because how would you be able to squeeze out the thing which is itself? But we'll see all the variations on this theme when it comes into the question of Basar B'cholov today. So if you have the major issues clear in your head, you will not get confused by the multiplicity of factors that we need to take into consideration when we're talking about these sugyas. So again, Basar V'Cholav, we're taking for granted that Basar V'Cholav is a new entity. Now, that's not necessarily true. Maybe Basar V'Cholav is also a din of having the tam of the cholav and the basar, or having the tam of the basar and the cholav. And even that is not absolutely clear, because the Torah doesn't say anything about not cooking the milk and the meat of the mother. It talks about not cooking the meat and the milk of the mother. So then, does the milk ever become usher, or does only the meat become usher because it was cooked in the milk? So you can see we can get at some serious fundamental questions over here that are not at all obvious if you think about them. And therefore, we're going to be dealing with, as I said, multiple factors. Is this a din in tam, or is it a din in the fact that these two things were cooked together and I don't care what they taste like at this point? And even if you'd get all the tam out, what difference is it? The Torah said these two items cooked together are usher, period. Now, who are you to say, okay, I waved my magic wand of de-chaloving them by putting them into a big pot of water? I mean, whoever said that that's important? So all of this is going to be explored, and it starts with our very own competence opening words, a drop of milk, innocently or perhaps not so innocently, falls on a piece of meat. And we don't know all the deal over here. Is the piece of meat sticking out of the pot? Is it being mixed? Is the pot immediately covered? How much time does it take before it's mixed? Is the guy watching YouTube while he's mixing? All of this we're going to discover in the Gemara. So, Tipat Chalav. Tipat Chalav. Shenafla alachit chaticha. If there's enough in that one tiny drop to give taste into that one single piece, so then that piece becomes usher. Now, if you now stir the pot, do I mean that? If you now stir the pot? No, I don't mean that. Because if you now stir the pot after that piece was usher, then you've got the problem of, did that piece become an avela and now it will usher the whole pot? And that's not what the Mishnah explores here. The Mishnah explores if you're stirring the pot as soon as the drop, or while the drop fell on that piece, then that piece did not absorb specially any different than the entire pot. So then, im yesh babenotein ta botaki deira, then only if there's enough milk that entire pot is going to have a milky flavor in the meat, only then is it usher. But otherwise, it's not going to become usher because it's going to be dispersed throughout the soup and whatever is in that pot, and therefore there's no problem. So again, the issue over here is, where was that piece? And we're talking about that the piece was sticking out of the rotav. So even if some of it may have been in the rotav, since it wasn't fully inside of the rotav, we're still worried about its going bedafka into that piece. However, that's how Rashi learns. It is not the way that everybody agrees, and there are many Rishonim who say that it's only if the piece were entirely out of the pot. But if there were part of the piece that was stuck in the soup, as we explained before when we were doing the chalev and the basar mixture, then it would be considered to be in the entire mixture. And therefore, ni'eret hakedera would only be important when it wasn't in, at least partially, in the soup while the drop of milk landed on it. Okay, so that itself is another machlokas. Is chaticha na'aseit nevela possible where the piece had even a small part of itself was immersed in the medium that was dispersing the taste? So in this case, it was sticking into the gravy or into the soup. According to Rashi, it doesn't matter. If the area of the piece that the milk fell on was not in the soup, then the Mishnah obtains. According to many other Rishonim, we only think about the problem of Chatichas Nevela in the event that the entire piece is not inside of the soup. So that's our first issue. Okay, now, what this seems to say is that Basar V'Cholav, even though it's a big Kiddush in the Torah, I mean, here we've got two completely mutters things, and now all of a sudden put them together and they become Usur. And the Mishnah seems to make this dependent on the taste. But where did the Torah ever talk about the taste? I mean, maybe you don't need the taste. Maybe it's just the fact that these two things are together that make them Usur. Therefore, says Abaye, it appears to me from here that since we're taking for granted that it's a function of the taste and only of the taste, then that means that the Torah considers a taste to be an actual equivalent to a particular substance. Because otherwise, if the issue is that these two substances are not supposed to be mixed, where did you get the idea that you need a taste? So if you're talking about the fact that taste itself is a molecular presence of the item, then it makes sense to say, well, obviously, if there's no taste, then there's nothing there that was halakhically present because it's not detectable in our very sensitive molecular detection unit, which is called our taste buds. And because of that, it wouldn't be there. But if there's no din of the substance's presence, then it's just the fact that the two things were cooked together, then why do we care what it tastes like? Therefore, says Abaye, it's clear to me that you have to follow his logic. It's clear to me, therefore, if the Mishnah says that Basar V'Cholav is a function of taste, the only way to explain that is to say that taste in the Torah is an indication of molecular presence, and it has a din that the thing itself is there. So remember, we all along we wonder what type of central data allows us to determine the presence of a thing, lahalacha, right? So we know that if we see something, that is a primary halachic description. We were never sure whether other modalities of detection are considered lahalacha to be present. From here, says Abaye, you see that you also utilize taste as an absolute determinant of whether something is there or not, which proves that ta'amo v'lo mamasho, even though we only have a taste and we do not in any other way see this thing here, that is still called d'oraita to be the presence of the thing itself. Because look, if this din, and many people, says Abaye, many people think that the whole idea of tam that we were talking about and tam ke'ikar, and all of that's a gezer d'rabbanan. But if it were only d'rabbanan, how do you explain Basar V'Cholav? I will ask you, dear Rabbana, why didn't you learn out from the Torah that taste is Asur because Basar V'Cholav would have told you that it's Asur Midiraisa, right? And I know what you're going to answer. You're going to tell me, how can we learn out of Basar B'Cholov? Basar B'Cholov is a Chiddush that violates our normal understanding of the presence of things, because there's two very important issues that are important for us to recognize. One is the obvious Chiddush of Basar B'Cholov, which is not that much of a Chiddush. I mean, look, two things in which both were mutter, all of a sudden become usher when they're together. I mean, is that something so unusual? Well, what happened to Kaloyat Kerem? And what happened to other dinim of Kilayim? I mean, it's a pretty big yisod in the Torah that there are things that don't belong together. I don't know whether that is in any way a contradiction to the normative way of looking at things, right? So the other issue is that here, the Torah also does not asur it unless it actually was cooked together. What about if you soak basar in cholov for a week? Now, it is absolutely, oh gosh, it tastes delicious, fully milky meat. As far as the Torah is concerned, that's completely kosher. The Torah only said, Lo tivashel gedi b'chalev imo, and repeats it three times to tell me that that lo tivashel, if you did bashel, then you're not allowed to eat it. But if you soaked it and it tastes like milk, there never was the slightest indication in the Torah that such a thing would be usur to eat. So therefore, it isn't really a function of the mixture of the thing. It's a new idea that cooking something is usur. That is so weird. And not only that, the cooking alone is usur, even if you don't eat it. That's even weirder. So therefore, this thing is a total chiddush. So I can't learn out from here what you're claiming, that the tam is presence. Then I ask you, says Abaya, then how do you explain the fact that you only usur it when there's a taste? If it's a chiddush, so then why does this Mishnah say that there has to be enough taste in the drop of milk to asur the whole thing? Where the heck did that come from? E chiddush is to say, it's magic. The Torah said, if you cook a piece of meat and milk together, it's asur. Never said a word about tasting. And you're going to tell me, and I can't learn out from that. Okay, so how did you come up with the idea, if it's a chiddush, that it has anything to do with taste? I thought you just said the reason I can't learn out from it is because it makes no sense in normative halacha. Just if I cook it, okay, fine. So it's a chiddush. But then this Mishnah makes sense. Makes no sense. Because then afagav deleka tam nami. So then it's clear that you don't view it as a chiddush and you view it as something that is supposed to make sense, in which case you view it as an element of the nature of the Isurim of taste. And since over here the Torah considers the taste, you said so beferish, if there's no taste, there's no problem. Why not? It was cooked together. So obviously you're telling me that the taste is the definition of the substances being cooked together. That's what you're saying. So there's no way that you can get away with then claiming that the taste is not definitive, it's only a derabanan, because then the whole Basar B'Cholov issue makes no sense. That's my logic. Seems impeccable, but it's wrong. Why is it wrong? Says Rava, I don't say that you are wrong, but I say that your logic is wrong. So you may have ended up saying something that's right. That I don't know. But you cannot prove from the fact that we're taking into consideration the tam of the cholov, that proves that the tam is the definition of presence. Why not? Because the iser in Basar B'Cholov is cooking. And people don't cook things without taste, case you ever noticed. I mean, unless you're talking about the yeshiva kitchen, but I'm saying normally. The idea actually is that the definition of cooking is putting the taste into something, and therefore the Torah said it has to be cooked, and it's not cooked if you don't taste it. That's all. But who's to say that that means that the taste is the definition of the presence? That is taking things out of context, I say. So, Amar le Rava, derech bishul asra Torah. Well, if it doesn't taste like anything, then it wasn't cooked. Because that's how we define cooking. I'm not saying that you're wrong. It may be that Tom is a deer eyes, but I don't see how you see it here. Okay. Wow. Omar Rav. Now, there's another question over here. When it says that the mixture is usr, it says, im yesh ba, benote tam b'toch haticha, it is usr. But what is it? That's the question. Are we talking about the tipa? Are we talking about the piece? What exactly is it that is usr over here? So Amar Rav, what we're talking about is the entire mixture. The whole pot is usr. Why? Because kivan shenatan ta'am b'chaticha, chaticha atzma na'aseit nevela, v'yoseret kol achichtichot kulam, mipnei shehen mina. Once the milk fell on that one piece, and there was taste in that piece, then when we say it is usr, we did not mean it, the piece, we meant the pot. Because the entire pot became usr because of chaticha na'aseit nevela, and it doesn't matter how many other pieces there are, because I hold like Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda says, min b'mina yeno bato. And therefore, if one piece here is nevela, and it's not actually being bato in the entire pot, then the whole pot's going to be usr, and it can't be bato, because if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, even if there's 1,000 pieces, it's not going to be bottle. Now, just wait a second over here. Amalei Marzuta Breda Amari Lovina, how come he seems to be ignoring the other important element that I mentioned to you before, and that is the question of if you have a mixture of min and mino and dover acher. Which I'm assuming we have over here. We have pieces of steak, and then we have, of course, all the gravy that's at the bottom. Now, that's a dover acher. And I thought Rava himself said before that if you have min v'mino v'davar acher, this was a very important Gavi rule that we had last week, salek et mino k'misha eno, and see if eno mino rabba lavu mevatlo, before you start shooting off about min b'mino and so on. First, see whether you were maybe mevatlo the min b'mino in the soup by using she'eno mino to be mevatlo it. How come Rav doesn't even talk about that? So Rav Kaman Amar L'Shmaita, he's going according to Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda said that min b'mino lo bato. But does that mean that Rav doesn't even hold of that sugya that we spoke about last week, which was said by Rava? The Amar Rava, Rava said that this is Rabbi Yehuda's own svara, and that's the way that he explained the whole sugya before. That kol shehu mino, min v'mino, and another thing, which was eno mino, so it's min v'mino v'davar acher, salek et mino k'misha eno. First, take the mino out of the equation. Doc.
Sweet.
We're not talking about doc chatichas over here. We're talking about doc chaim. Yes, there we go. So in this case, if you've got b'min b'mino and min b'she eno mino, salek et mino k'misha eno v'she eno mino rabba lavu mevato. And he's completely ignoring this. He's saying, oh, it's just a question if there's other pieces in a mixture. That's not true. Omar Lane, Saravina said, no. Of course, he could agree entirely with Rava's explanation of Rabbi Yehuda that we first look at the proportion of eno mino to mino before we start talking about min v'mino lo batil. But that would only be if it falls into a pot with something like soup or gravy. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about it fell into a pot of thick, this is a thick gravy that basically is the same as the meat itself, which often happens if you're putting a steak into like a very little bit of oil, and then you cook it, and all of the moisture comes out of the steak, and then you can barely taste the difference between what is pure meat and what is just the deposit that came out of the steak in the pot. That's called a rotav ava, a very thick gravy. And a very thick gravy is not considered to be anomino because it's basically, it tastes exactly the same as the steak itself. So if we had been talking about over here where a drop of milk falls into a pot of that's a watery gravy, well, then of course he would have said that. But in our Mishnah, we're making the assumption that we can avoid the details by making it a pure min v'mino, and therefore I don't have to start getting into those details. Remember, and whenever we have a fundamental statement like in a Mishnah, it's always sort of a laboratory situation to avoid as much as possible any type of introduction of extraneous factors. So we don't want to introduce that factor here. And therefore, we have to assume that the Mishnah is talking about a case of Hachaba Mayaskinan de Nafa Barotev Ava. So it fell into a thick gravy, and therefore it's all min v'mina. Now, here's my question. When Rav says that this piece is considered to be permanently usher as an avela, and when it's now mixed into the rest of the pot, it answers everything in the pot. What does Rav hold about if the pot, then if you took that one piece and you put it into a brand new cooking pot of delicious soup, and now you're going to disperse the flavor that was in the original piece, you're going to disperse the flavor throughout the next pot. What does Rav hold would happen to that piece itself? So now it was diluted tremendously. Would he still say it was usser? Does he hold, and what is that called? Efsher l'sochato. Can you squeeze out, so to speak, the isser by redistributing it in a lower concentration? And now you would have less than the taste of milk in that piece. Mutar. So then if he would possibly say you could squeeze it out, so why would he say chaticha naaseit nevela? It can't be an actual nevela if you could just take the taste of the milk out of it again. So clearly, the moment that he says that it's chaticha naaseit nevela, he is saying that there's no possible way to ever squeeze out the taste because it's irrelevant. And therefore, because somer efshel sochato asur. So it's clear that Rav holds that once something is originally turned into a chatichat nevela because now it's a piece of basar b'cholav, it remains basar b'cholav even though it no longer tastes like basar b'cholav. It was only the initial cooking that was making it basar b'cholav. And subsequently, it doesn't need to maintain a status of basar that tastes like cholav. It was basar cooked in cholav, and that's the end of it. Who cares now what it tastes like? As you can see, how this is all evolving from a bias first pointing to the nature of the taste in basar b'cholav. And now the question is whether it's that taste that is the isser of basar b'cholav or that taste that created the isser of basar b'cholav. So each step here is another finer and finer definition of the isser that we're talking about. These are extremely fundamental sugyas that go through so much of the Shulchan Aruch, and go through all of the Dinim of Taruvas, and go through all of Shas. It's really kedai to try to get them clear in your mind that these the words of these Musagim should be second nature, and they make perfectly good sense to the point where they're just simple ideas. And when we first met them, maybe they sound very esoteric, but by the time we finish the sugya, they're just simple terms that you would talk about to Ori, for heaven's sakes. Does Ori know what chaticha naaseit nevela means yet? Well, then she will soon. What do you say, Ori? Do you hold efshel sochto and chaticha naaseit nevela are fundamentally connected in all sugyas or only in basar v'cholav? What is your pronouncement on this issue? I see. Your father apparently disagrees and he's muted you. Doesn't bode well. Looks like you'll need a chazara. Okay, let's explore that Efshalasokto is. Diitma. Rav, Rabbi Hanina, and Rabbi Yochanan, they all hold that Efshalasokhato is Asur, whereas Shmuel and Rabbi Shimon Bar Rebbe and Reish Lakish all hold that Efshar Lesochato is Mutar, and that you could actually take out the taste. Here we're talking about Basar V'Chalav, and make it Mutar again. What? Rav holds Efshar Lesochato Asur? Then how do you explain the fact Ve'Itmar? But Rav himself said about this case, Kizayit Basar, Shenafal Toch Yora Shel Chalav. Now here we have the same case, it's just in the inverse. Instead of a drop of milk falling on a piece of meat, we have a drop of meat, of course, drop in the sense of it's being a dollop, not a drop, because meat doesn't turn into liquid and drops, but we have a dollop of meat falling into a big pot of milk. What would be the din? And Rav said, well, the buzzer that fell in is usser, but the milk is mutter, because look, the buzzer is usser because it tastes like milk, but the milk wasn't affected by that little dollop of buzzer, and the milk doesn't taste like meat, so therefore the milk would be actually mutter. But my problem is that if Rav in fact holds that chaticha naaseit nevela, and that the fact that afterwards you squeeze out the iser doesn't change anything, and it remains always usser, well, if Rav holds that it remains always usser, then in this case, let's think about the chalav that was originally absorbed into that first piece, that dollop. So we've got now 1 ounce of meat in this 1,000-ounce pot. Right? Okay. That 1 ounce of meat, is it a nevela? Yes. He says, chaticha nasis nevela. Obviously, that would be true on the milk as well, wouldn't it? If the meat is nevela, then the milk is nevela. But then, when the milk is redistributed in the mixture, that milk is min b'minai. And even a little bit, that 1 ounce of milk that was inside of the dollop of meat, now came out, it didn't become mutter because Efshel Asokto remains usser, and now it is a min bimino in the pot of milk, and all the milk should be usser. So how could you tell me that Rav holds Efshel Asokto is usser, and that chaticha naset nevela, and nonetheless he would say, well, only the meat is usser, but the milk isn't usser. The milk is usser because of min bimino lo botel afilu be'alef. How do you explain that? I'll tell you. Of course, Rav holds Efshel Asokto Asur. He has to. Otherwise, how would we explain the chaticha naaseit nevela that we said about the basar? But this is different. Where did the Torah ever say that milk cooked in meat is Asur? It's not such issue. It says don't cook meat in milk. It doesn't say don't cook milk in meat. So much for all of your assumptions. It's amazing how the Gemara just tears it all apart. So if Rav would hold Efshel Asokto is Asur, but how does that mean that the milk is Asur? Shine Hatam, the Torah said beferish, lo tevashel gedi b'chalei v'imo. It didn't say anything about the inverse. So the gedi asra Torah, but the Torah never asered the milk. The whole point of the pasuk is to say, don't cook the meat in the milk. And therefore, there was no iser that is called me'anasis nevela when it comes to the issue of the milk. But does Rav really hold that? V'sava Rav gedi asra Torah v'lo chalav. Rav always holds that. You're telling me that basar b'chalav actually is only an iser on the basar part and not on the chalav part. Oh, my God. But then how do you explain the fact that Rav says that if you have a half a zayas of basar and a half a zayas of chalav, now you cook these two things together, Do you get malkas for cooking Batzer B'cholach? Says Rav, no. You do not get malkas for cooking Batzer B'cholach. But you do get malkas for eating it. Huh? But I felt there's only a Chatzis Zayit here. Ah, there's only a Chatzis Zayit of Gedi, but there's another Chatzis Zayit of the Chalav, and the Torah has this new entity called Basar B'Chalav, and you're usher to eat it, and if you ate a Kazayis of it, what is it? Not the meat, not the milk, the mixture of the meat and milk, so then you're over. So how could you tell me that Rav said, what? You said Rav says you're not over on the milk part. You're over on the meat part. And there is no Isser of Basar B'Cholav. There's only an Isser of Basar that was cooked in Cholav. But that's not a new entity called Basar B'Cholav. So then how if you ate a Kizayit, it where you really only ate a Chatzizayit of the Gedi that was cooked in milk, how could Rav possibly say that you're Chayim Malkas for Basar B'Cholav if you didn't eat Basar B'Cholav, darn it? I only see a Chatzis Ayat of Gedi, and that's the only part that's usher. And yet Rav Amar Lokal HaChilato, you may not be Lokal on cooking it, and we'll see why in a moment, but you will be Chayiv if you eat it. Why? Amar Lokal... Why would you get malkas for eating a chatzis zayit? It's only a chatzis year, according to the way Rav understands things. So we were wrong. It's got to be that Rav agrees that the Torah assers the entity called Basar B'Cholav. Which, of course, I mean, that was the whole point, wasn't it, of the Chaticha Naaseit Nevela? That it's a new entity. It's not a taste. Okay, you're right. I give up. But you got to admit it was fun thinking about it, no? But anyway, I give up. Okay, so Basar B'Cholav really is Basar B'Cholav and not Basar with Cholav. So the Yolam Kasavar Rav, Cholav Namiyas. So clearly he's got to hold that the milk is part of the Basar B'Cholav. So when we said that when you fall into a dollop of meat falls into this big pot of cooking milk, why in the world then would Rav not hold, based on his own shita of Chaticha Naaseit Nevela, why would he say that the milk is mutter? The moment that the milk that went into the original small, tiny piece of meat, the moment that that milk, you're saying, okay, but it's only a tiny bit of milk. I know, but Rav holds love for you. It min b'mino is not bottle, even the elef. I don't care how small it is. So it was a small bit of milk, and it doesn't change even after it's redistributed. It remains usher. So then it's min b'mino. If it's efshel esochto is usher, then it remains a min b'mino because it itself became an avail, and pow, there goes the whole pot of milk. So how would Rav say that the milk is mutter? It doesn't make any sense. It does. But it's a different logistical question. I'll tell you what the logistical question is, says the Gemara. You're forgetting the concept of osmotic pressure. So how does osmotic pressure work? What it means is that when you have mixtures that are different inside and outside of a membrane. So what happens is that as long as it's penetratable, eventually it's going to equalize, right? So if you put something into salt water and there's no salt in the thing that you put in, the salt is going to ultimately displace. This is how salting works for the blood. The salt is going to displace the other distribution until it equalizes inside and out. That's osmotic pressure. Now, heat creates an osmotic pressure that's external. You've got something that's boiling milk. There's a piece of meat that's there. And the hotter the pressure is on the material that is outside of the milk, outside of the meat, the more the meat is going to absorb and seek to equalize the amount of milk outside in the pot with the amount of milk that's distributed throughout the meat, correct? As long as that milk is boiling, the osmotic pressure is greater for the absorption of the milk into the meat than it is for the milk to be allowed out of the meat and to go back into the pot. Therefore, forgetting that is why you've got a problem. Because what we're talking about over here is the dollop of meat fell into a boiling pot of milk. And that's why the milk, counterintuitively, is mutter. If it wouldn't have fallen into a boiling pot of milk, then it would have been usser. But since the milk is boiling, that's the reason that the meat is in a state of absorption of milk and not of putting milk out back into the pot. So it's, remember we have that klal, it was a gavi klal earlier, which was once we have torud lemefak, if it is something to be torud, to give out, then it's eno bolea. So if that's the case, it's not going to absorb the milk. It's not going to exude the milk. So achamayaskinan kigon shenofel atoch yora roteach, and therefore the meat is absorbing, but the meat is not being polite. So kiva de torod livloa eno polite. But I don't understand. I mean, but that's only when the osmotic pressure is uneven. But when things equalize, what's going to happen then? So then it's going to end up ossering all of the milk again. If you leave it in the pot and now the pot cools down, what's going to happen? The milk is going to go out of the piece of meat, become redistributed, and it's going to be min b'minai, and it's going to ossor all of the milk in the pot. So how did Rav say all of a sudden that it's mutter? It's not mutter. You're right. Obviously, Rav was talking about a case where the dollop of meat falls into the boiling pot of milk and it's taken out before there's a chance of redistribution and the milk never cooled off. And therefore, that was the case. He was talking about a situation in which he's trying to tell you the biggest chiddush that he can tell you in the smallest amount of space, okay? You are supposedly the intelligent reader. This is not a Gemara for dummies. And therefore, you have to figure out that the case, I mean, because it strikes you as being very counterintuitive. Gosh, why would the milk be okay? So you try all of the possibilities. Maybe the milk is okay because Rav's milk isn't usher with Basar B'cholot. Nah, that doesn't work. Okay, so then it's usher because it only absorbed in one direction. So then you have to ask yourself, how could that be? Well, it could only be if the pot was boiling and you removed the dollop of meat before and had a chance to allow any of the milk that was in it to go back into the mixture, which would then have made it min b'mina. Isn't that wonderful? My gosh. I mean, just take a look at what has happened by talking about tipat chalav. It's amazing. A drop of milk. Here's the story for today, little children. A drop of milk walks into falls onto a piece of meat. Everything sounds very simple. And yet by the end of the day, we're in the middle of all of Shas. We've got all the half of the Shulchan Aruch and the Bishonim and the Mefarshim on the Shulchan Aruch are all open in front of us. And we're trying to figure out what happened to that little drop of milk that fell onto the meat. You got to admit, it's absolutely, nobody else has got these kind of experiences. You have to be learning the daf. Amazing. Okay. So obviously talking about Bishakadam Vesilko. So that's the only way it works out. Okay, now, we said, and we left this hanging, and you never explained why this would be true. You said a minute ago that according to Rav, if you cook a half a zayat of basar and a half a zayat of chalav, and then you eat the mixture, then you're going to be over on basar b'chalav. But if you cook it, you're not over for the cooking. Well, I don't understand. I mean, either it is basar b'chalav or it's not basar b'chalav. I mean, why are you putter on the cooking and you're only chayiv on the eating? So let's look into that. Gufa. Chatzi zayit basar. For chatzi zayit chalav. Should be shlam ze imze. Rav said, loke al achilato, ve'eno loke al bishulo. So I don't get it. I mean, manafshach, look, you got to make up your mind over here. Either you hold that the milk part and the meat part are mitzarfim together to give the shear, So then you should be chayiv for the shear of bishul. And if you hold the meat and the milk are not mitztarfim, so then why are they mitztarif for the eating? No. La'olam lo mitztarfi. Rav doesn't hold that you can be mitzarif v'chatzi zayin. When he says that you're chayiv malkas, he wasn't talking about the same case where you started with a chatzi zayit chalav and a chatzi zayit basar. He was talking about where you had the two chatzi zesim came out of a pot. In this pot, there were plenty of kizesim of meat and plenty of kizesim of milk, and they mixed. Once they are this new entity of a mixed piece of meat, a piece of meat is a kizayis of meat that would give you a din of achila in the meat. And you have a piece of milk. How do you have a piece of milk? I thought you would have to have a revius of milk. How did all of a sudden, how do you get a kizayis of milk? You do get a kizayit of milk. We're not talking about a liquid here. We're talking about the cooking of two entities that are defined by their ultimate dispensation of achila. So we're talking about a kizayit of milk. We're not talking about a revius of milk. How do you get a kizayit of milk? Well, Rashi says, you know how to get a kizayit of milk. After all, Archimedes didn't live for nothing, did he? So what you do is you bring a full cup of milk and you bring a zayit. You put the zayit into the milk and whatever came out, that was the kizayit, because the volume of the kizayit is now the volume of the kizayit of the liquid. And remember, kizetim are volume measurements. They are not weight measurements. Even though everybody keeps talking about a kizayit as if it's weight, it isn't weight. This is what gets people very confused about achilas matzah and so on and so forth. And because of that, we're really talking about a kizayit over here, and that's how the Tosefta defines what we mean by a kizayit of cholav. And we're not kidding around when we say it really is a kizayit of cholav. So, basically, we're talking about a pot. You took out a kizayit of mixed basar b'cholav, and, of course, there you would be chayiv, because you already created the entity of the basar b'cholav. But, says Rav, you cannot create the entity if you don't have something that would have been a din of achila l'chatchila, so then you never made the mixture of a basar b'cholav, which is edible basar with edible cholav. And with less than a kizayit of each, you don't have a basar b'cholav. That's Rav Shita. Whereas Levi says, af loke al bishul. Oh, I disagree. And I say the same way, that you include both components in the single entity. The combination as an entity takes place in the bishul. And therefore, if you start off with a total of a kizayis made of mixed basar b'cholav, and you cook it together, Tzuri, I would be really upset bringing you in after chatichan ases the vela, just to this last piece, and then you miss out on the main sugya. I would insist, if I were you, that your Abba goes over the entire sugya from the beginning and reviews it. Or you could always go to your dear uncle, who's hiding today. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so now Levi says the Malkus is also on the Bishul. And V'chem Tanya Levi B'masnisa. Levi actually had a Braita that supported him in this issue. And he learned in this Braita that says, K'shem sheloke al achilato, kach loke al bishulo. And what do we mean by cooking? By cooking, we mean bishul she'achirim ochlim oto machmat bishulo. So what we mean is that it has to be cooked the way that a goy who wants to cook basar b'cholav, that it should taste correct to him, that's what the Torah means by that cooking. Like we said before, cooking is the point, as Rava pointed out, is the point of taste. Now, that's not the way all of the Rishonim learn. It's a very reasonable way in which the Achronim understand the sugya, but The Pashtus, it could be a reference to, which is the simple mashmaut of some of the Rishonim, is that we're talking about Acherim in terms of what we're going to find later, and we've had it before, and I believe that it was an early Gavi term when we were learning the Dinim of Bishul for Shabbos and learning the Dinim in Brochas, and that is Kima'achal ben Drusai. Do you remember that, Gav? Kima'achal ben Drusai. So Drusai, that was the name of a big mafioso family. Of course, they were Jewish, naturally. They didn't have Italians yet then. It was only the Jews that started that. And he used to be spend the night going around, robbing all the banks. And then they had an early breakfast, but they were definitely not interested in getting caught by the cops. So they only cooked things to one third of the bishul and ate fast. So that's called Kima'achal ben Drusai.
Fast food, breakfast to go.
Right. Very good. Okay. So that is the bishul. That may be the pshat. Bishul shachir mochli moto. Okay. Anyway, moving on. So what did we say? We said that efshel l'sochato, clearly Rav has told efshel l'sochato is aser, and we also brought three amarayim that hold efshel l'sochato aser, and three amarayim that hold efshel l'sochato mutter. But it turns out that the question of efshel l'sochato as a matter on its own is actually a machlokas tanai. The Tanya. Tipat chalav shenafla ala chaticha, kimen shenatna ta'am b'chaticha, chaticha tzma na'aseit nevela, and oseret kol hatichot kulam, b'pnei she'imina divi Reb Yehuda. So this would be our classic, simple one-sentence explanation, which is the way that we spoke about it before with the chalav, according to Reb Yehuda, m'pnei she'imina, and here it's Reb Yehuda himself who's pointing this out. Because of my problem of min b'mino, you get into these complex situations in which it doesn't look like something is min b'mino, but it is. How did it become min b'mino? Because the thing that was mino turned out to be a nevela, even though it started off as a piece of steak. So that's the problem with the chaticha na'aseis nevela. Where the chachomim say, no, you never look at it like that. You look at it, ad shetitein tam, berotav, bekipa, bechatichichon. We distribute the taste throughout, if there's enough, that it should be a usher throughout the entire mixture, then it's usher. And if there's only enough taste to put it into that little piece, then it doesn't become usher. So here is where the Gemara introduces the mixing problem. So as I mentioned to you before, one of the factors that is necessary to take into consideration is the pot covered? Was the pot being mixed? Do we have to wonder about how well it's being mixed? Those issues are what the Gemara raises now, but I'm going to have to leave you off since it's so late. And as a matter of fact, I think you've got enough to put in your pot and cook it, or to put in your pipe and smoke it. But one way or the other, you've got some heavy-duty stuff over here. And I notice that although Houdini has disappeared, Sir Richard is still here making himself available for further explanations. Anyone who did not follow all of the ins and outs of the sugya, for our very own Sir Richard, who's learning this now for the seventh time, for heaven's sake, it would be very easy for him to set your doubts at ease. So anybody, you want to just put your 1-800 number up there, Richie, and the operators are standing by.
I'm sorry, Rabbi, but my Alzheimer's has gotten to the stage where I've even forgotten my number. So,
so
when I learned
seven years ago, if we don't get your number from you,
long gone.
No,
what I learned about half an hour ago.
No, Richie, I paskin today that efshel l'sochato is usher. And therefore, all of that memory that you claim was redistributed in your kishka is actually still there in your memory. And it's just a question of the proper stimuli. And those stimuli consist of all of these wonderful people out here who want to access your memory. So when you figure out your number, please post it. All right, everyone.
It's just a question of stirring the pot, Rebbe.
Yeah, you're right.
People try to squeeze Richie all the time.
And I'm trying to stir the pot. Okay, beautiful. Anyway, so it was a lot of fun, at least for me. I hope everybody enjoyed it. It's really quite an amazing journey to watch that little drop of milk. And Bezrat Hashem, we'll take a look and see how YouTube will actually disturb the mixing of our Basar B'Cholav over here and could make a big difference in the dinim of Efshel Sof Tor, Chatichan Hasei Snevela. Okay, everyone. Have a wonderful day.